The next case was presented by Dr. William Reeves.
This is a 37-year-old single working mother. She's a clerk, had some minor trauma, and went in for an evaluation, and by the way, had a mammogram because of the breast trauma, and the other side was found to have a non-palpable mass that measured 0.9 centimeters. It was an infiltrating ductal carcinoma that was grade 3. It was estrogen receptor positive, progesterone receptor negative, and HER2-new 3+. She went on to have a lumpectomy. This was in December of 2004, and then was sent to come see us as an oncologist in February. She was node negative. She initially went through the consult, and we talked about adjuvant chemotherapy, and she flat out refused, said that she would not take chemotherapy.
Just to clarify, when you said node negative, was that sentinel node?
Yes, there was 2 sentinel nodes done, and an additional, I think, 3 nodes were just sampled by the surgeon. So when she refused chemo, she was somewhat vague about why, and then, you know, at our insistence, went on to a second opinion at a university, and they also recommended chemo, and she came back and flat out said she would not do chemotherapy. And I talked with her a little bit more, and I said, well, you know, what would convince you? And she said, well, if you have something that really, you know, spells out my risk, I would consider that. So we went ahead and got the Oncotype, and her recurrence score came back at an 85.
High, it would be 31 or higher.
Right.
She was 85.
Out of 100, yeah. So when she looked at the numbers and realized that tamoxifen carried with it a significant risk of relapse alone, she compromised and said she would go ahead and do some chemotherapy. We agreed to do 4 cycles of AC in a dose-dense fashion. Got through those 4 cycles, and she had stopped menstruating, and we went ahead and started her on tamoxifen. We talked about Herceptin at that point, and she said she'd had enough intravenous stuff, and she needed to be back to a normal life, and she would not consider anything more beyond a tamoxifen.
So listening to the dates there, it sounds like the Herceptin data came out kind of in the middle of this.
Right.
So it wasn't out when you started her.
Well, the NSABP study had been reported, I believe, but all the studies had not yet come out until ASCO.
Right.
So she was done with her chemo about April.
So this woman has specific interests, et cetera, but if you think about the numbers in her case, that's what intrigued me, Rowan. 0.9 centimeter, node negative, ER-PR positive, HER2-positive tumor with a very high recurrence score. If she said to you, you know, I want to do everything I can to prevent recurrence, like most patients, I think more commonly than this patient, what would you have said?
Yeah, I mean, she'd be a candidate, in my view, for chemotherapy and Herceptin now. And it's interesting that, of course, the trial that's trying to validate that was going to have thrown out the people that have genomic profilings of HER2 overexpression because they're all been high risk. And so it's kind of an interesting thing. I think one of the issues before was to get for the genomic health to identify the high risk patients. But for HER2 overexpressors, since none of them fall into the low risk category, apparently in the human experience so far, so that isn't a reason, but it's a reason to recommend treatment for somebody like this there that maybe helped convince somebody that they really did need treatment. And then you have your choice of a number of different regimens in this kind of setting.
So you're saying that even without the recurrence score, 0.9 centimeter ERPR HER2 positive tumor, you would have thought that she should get chemotherapy and trastuzumab in addition to hormonal therapy.
Yeah, I think that's based really on the genomic health presentation that nobody who had HER2 overexpression, in effect in the genotype, were fit in a low risk score.
Well, Vicente, a lot of people look at, when they try to make decisions about a therapy, look at what the entry criteria on the trials were that defined it. While there were node negative patients in the adjuvant trastuzumab studies, particularly HERA and BCRG, she's ERPR positive. So she was actually under the bar of the clinical trials.
No, she was over the bar for HERA, but under the bar for BCRG. We took patients in our trial. We did include T1As and T1Bs that there were, but the only for the size part, but you are correct, she's ER positive. That was PR negative. So she will be a layer for the BCRG trial, but we haven't separated the data in T1As, T1Bs, T1Cs, but then in the non-negative patients, we see the benefit. So I think it, the nuclear grade 3, you know, you look at the score, the Oncotype score, you know, is proliferation, ER, HER2-new. So I think you have high proliferative and you have HER2. You knew that the score was going to be high, and all of the patients that are HER2-new positive, it's driven a lot by these genes. So I would think that since that happened, you finished the chemotherapy by April, you say? So you only had the HERA trial to fall in this particular patient. So I would the HERA trial did not include patients of 9 millimeters. They did include 1 centimeter. So she was short by 1 millimeter. I mean, biologically, this patient, I would encourage her, and she's not too late, so to consider girotrasduzumab, it will reduce her risk by half.
And even without genomic health, when you look at Peter Ravdin's kind of back of the envelope scoring system a little bit, is that HER2 overexpression kind of increases by 50% your hazard ratio for recurrence. And so this person isn't really a 1 centimeter tumor. He's really a 1.5 centimeter tumor, which would fit right in the middle.
But again, just to clarify for both of you, because there are a lot of questions about the node negative, ER positive, and HER2 positive tumor. You both, in general, upfront, forgetting the recurrence score, would use chemo and trastuzumab in a patient like that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that the use of genomic health, I think where it's have at least the biggest, it seems like, current traction is in finding low-risk people, seeing if they're high-risk. And I think that's legitimate. But in seeing the data that there aren't any low-risk HER2 patients, to me, answers the question. Because you said, I'm going to talk about a low-risk HER2 patient, and I'd say, I don't think there are any.
You know, it's interesting that you both feel that way, because I've asked quite a few clinical research leaders in breast cancer about this, and I think most people are pretty conservative about treating a tumor under a centimeter with trastuzumab. I'm not saying you're wrong. In fair balance, I'm pointing out that it's interesting we have two of you here who I think represent a little bit of an unusual perspective. Dr. Friedman?
Well, we've been mainly sticking with tumor size and nodal status as the major prognostic factors in breast cancer. I think all of this is very provocative, but we haven't incorporated that into our practice for patients who we think are going to have a better prognosis by virtue of their tumor size less than a centimeter and negative nodes.
But can I pose this question? If you decide to do a chemotherapy-based regimen in this patient, I won't have a problem. You say, well, I'm just going to give them tamoxifen because it's less than centimeter, ER positive, PR positive. But if you're going to give them chemotherapy, then you should give your best chemotherapy-based therapy for this patient, and that includes trastuzumab and all the studies that we have, three studies that we have seen, four different regimens, AC Taxol, TCH. So I have no problem. You say, well, you know, I treat them because it's less 9 millimeters. This is a small negative node, small tumor. But if you're going to give them chemotherapy, you may as well use the best.
I think the problem, Vicente, in terms of what you're saying makes sense, but now you're throwing in a 2 to 4% risk of cardiomyopathy in a situation where I'm not sure what the absolute benefit is. And again, I'm not saying what's right or wrong. I'm just trying to point out both sides of the argument here.
The other point I'd clarify is that the reason I went right away to the no hesitation answer is this 37-year-old woman. And I'd say under 50, I would say yes. I'm just thinking again out loud of how I approach it. Under 50 would be yes all the time. Over 50, then it becomes more of a judgment and where I started looking at the numbers. Because a 37-year-old is probably not going to be, no matter what regimen you give, they're not going to get this 4% congestive heart failure, I would think.
Scott?
My understanding is that the HERA trial, about a third of patients were node negative, and the benefit was seen equally in the node negative patients. It seems like we're going to continue to be confronted with looking at our historical prognostic factors, tumor size, nodal status, now with a future wave of molecular signatures, and we're going to have to really make treatment decisions based on what may be appearing to be conflicting prognostic indicators. And for someone like her, I mean, in my mind, the question is, has she gotten enough chemotherapy? Would you give her the trastuzumab alone, or would you give her a weekly Taxol with the Herceptin followed by another, you know, 40 weeks of Herceptin? And I think on your last tape, Dr. Burstein makes a very interesting observation where all the HER2 data is interesting in that we know how to treat HER2 patients now, and we know how to treat ER patients, but chemotherapy for HER2 new negative patients, there seems to be a vacuum of whether or not how much we're really benefiting those patients. So that would be the question I'd be asking myself is, do I give the Herceptin alone or do I give her, you know, with the Taxol?
Rowan?
Yeah, maybe one other thing is that as a general topic, going around talking to people on the Herceptin issue, a lot of people say they start off with AC, can't get to Herceptin, and it seems to be more than the 4%. I mean, basically, one way or another, drop the ejection fraction, something happens, you don't give it. And it's like one of those football games where they said the only way you can lose the game is by punting, you know, they get it blocked, and they say, well, don't punt, take the safety. So will we continue to give anthracycline first, just because we've done that historically for the past 25 years? What would be the danger of switching around and giving the taxane and Herceptin first, where we have some model for now? And we've really been thinking about that in our group, and we see the same thing with neoadjuvant. You give AC first, nothing happens, you give up, and you've not used your best therapy. And we know two-thirds of the patients who are not topo II overexpressors, you're given a 30-year-old therapy, you're given CMF. And so that's something to think about. You know, it seems not a good idea to give anthracyclines first, but that's what we're all doing when we're evidence-based, and the evidence may be really wrong, but there we are.
One more quick question, Vicente. You talked about the fact that, quote, it wasn't too late for this patient to consider it. And in this case, it's just a few months. But what about the issue of delayed trastuzumab? Patients who are a year, 2, 3 years out, maybe after a multiply node positive, HER2 positive tumor, a patient got maybe chemotherapy in the past, but obviously most likely not trastuzumab.
I think the biology of this disease is different than the biology of that classic ER-positive breast cancer than what you say that Paul say. You just go give an aromatase inhibitor, it has been 2 years or 3 or 5, we will have the opportunity to see the biology of these 12,000 women that were participating in this trial to see what is the rate of relapse and how much is the risk that they have at 2 years or 3 years to relapse. And if the people keep relapsing, biologically, you probably will reduce the risk of relapsing by half. And right now, we do not have any evidence-based data that given trastuzumab 3 years later and somebody has 3 positive nodes and didn't get it in the beginning, will get some benefit.
That means you don't do it?
3 years later, no.
2?
I'm just sticking with 1.
1 year. Rowan? 5 positive nodes 2 years later.
Yeah, we've been mostly 1, but talking to people, it looks like in the community and probably other people that window is extending as the patients are getting further away. And so I think a lot more people are going for 2. We haven't done it yet.
Alan?
Yeah, maybe for Dr. Tobowski, it sounds like you're using the genomic health assay now to say the patient you might not normally treat. If it's a high risk score, you'll treat. Mm-hmm. Take the flip side, patient who you would treat and you get a very low score at this point, are you willing to accept that and say, I'm not going to treat. Say a 43-year-old with a 1.8 centimeter moderately differentiated ER positive tumor, you might want to treat, but has a low score, like an 8 or something.
Make it 3.2 centimeters.
Yeah, so we're not, it's like one of those don't ask, don't tell. We're not sending in that setting, basically. So I would be uncomfortable with withholding therapy. So I think we're just using it the other way. But having said that, you know, the North Carolina group, which are separate from Genomic Health in JCO, just recently described that as, you know, validated for prognosis, not for predicting which therapy is used, but for prognosis. And I think that the data is very good for prognosis, I believe.
I think we're becoming wiser, and the benefit of chemotherapy in a patient that is 1.5 centimeter, that there is 43, that has a low score, is very marginal. And I think there's an evolved field. I mean, we're changing, and I think I won't have a problem myself not to give them chemotherapy, but I'm within the minority, because I say, well, if the tumor measures more than 1 centimeter, if it's 1.3 and she's 45, you have to give them chemotherapy. But that's what the data is showing, and that these patients, they're not getting that much benefit by using that particular CMF chemotherapy. You know?